Means it's time for Focus on Education with Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Tony Jones, joining me down. Good morning, Dr. Jones. How are you today?
Good morning. I am fantastic. Thank you for asking.
And this is our, I guess we can call this our Election Day version of Focus on Education. The schools are closed today, but staff is not. What are they doing?
Oh, my goodness. Our staff are so busy today. We have lots of training that happens on Election Day in general. Every year, unless it's a presidential election, then we actually completely close. Today, we are focused on Universal Design for Learning, which is a focus that comes out of the study that was commissioned for our special education department, which the study lasted all of last year. And one of the recommendations was that every teacher in the district, which is a big ask, be trained in Universal Design for Learning. So it's not something that is just utilized for special education. It's used in our general education as well, and it really strengthens the knowledge base that our teachers have about how to adapt their teaching to meet the needs of every student.
Okay. Now, getting back to school, why are schools closed today? Because they're polling locations, or what's the story?
That's correct. On days when we have election days, they utilize our gyms. And because you have a lot of people, number one, coming into your building, it's safer for children and young people to be at home. And then the second aspect is we lose our gym. And so it makes it very difficult to conduct school when you lose such a major portion of your building that's either used for electives or, in these last 2 years, some of our gyms are actually used for cafeterias because of COVID.
I see. Okay. So then I guess in the days leading up to Election Day, the students get civic lessons and things like that about elections and so forth?
That happens probably more at high school where, for instance, you probably saw in the local news where they hosted a debate for the actual candidates that was student-led by We the People. They really are very focused, especially at that age where a lot of our seniors are old enough to vote for the first time. In our other grade levels, it tends to tie more closely to what is actually in their curriculum as far as if they don't normally study that aspect of civics because it's not necessarily developmentally appropriate, then they're continuing on with what they would normally do. And for the younger grades, that could be, just studying the family as part of social studies. And then it moves to studying your local community. Then it moves to, state. So it really depends where they are in their curriculum.
All right. Have you voted already today?
I have not. I am this afternoon, though.
Okay, fantastic. Speaking with Dr. Tony Jones on Focus on Education here on WGCH, let's talk about coming up Big Day Thursday, 2 days from now. You make your budget presentation to the school board.
I do, absolutely. This is the time of the year where one of the first localities, from a school board standpoint, we present our budget very early. A lot of my colleagues present their budgets in January, so we work on this budget year-round. Once one budget is approved, you start in the summer working on the next one. I will be presenting on Thursday evening, and we feel like this is an excellent budget this year. Really proud of the work that our senior team have been doing to be as efficient as absolutely possible, making sure that every dollar is spent to increase academics for our children and make sure that the district is managed in a fantastic way. And I think this budget is going to do that, and we're excited to present it on Thursday.
Okay, any highlights you can give us?
Oh, my goodness. Well, the BET gave us guidance that is 2.65%, and then on top of that, they understood that with the special education study, we could have an additional $500,000 that could be needed. I think they're going to be pleased with the numbers that we bring forward. We're very, very close at that guidance. And so I think that that's a collaborative way to start with a new board, several new board members who are going to be joining us. And it's always hard for new board members to basically have their first meeting and they have to get knee deep in the budget. There's a lot to learn. And I think it's going to be a collaborative process. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. And capital projects you can highlight?
Capital project, we have three major projects that we'll present, so it's a smaller list than normal, as in the capital major projects, but we have a lot of infrastructure So we will have a lot of work to do to go through all of those infrastructure projects before the board, you know, finally approves the budget and to move it forward to the BET. Obviously, we have a lot of capital needs. I think capital is going to have a lot more discussion this year than probably it has in previous years, just simply because it is so critical. And we are behind on our capital planning in relation to our master plan.
Let me ask you about the you mentioned that so the board members, the elections are tonight, but then the board members, they're seated right away?
At our next business meeting. So we will present the budget just at the budget meeting, and then at our next business meeting, they will be sworn in between that meeting and the next one. So at their first meeting, you know, the budget has been presented, and they have to start beginning, you know, to really understand it, because it's a thick budget book that has a lot of information in it.
Okay, so it sounds like it's going to be a little crowded, right? Because there'll be the current members, including those that may be leaving, including the board chair, Peter Bernstein, as well as new members coming in that are not on the board now. Is that correct?
Well, they sit in the audience.
In the audience, I got you. Okay.
Several of them have been coming to our meeting.
Sure.
So, you know, they've been in attendance in the audience.
All right. But Peter Bernstein still presides as current chair.
That's correct. Until his last meeting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
We're going to take a break with Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Tony Jones. Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Tony Jones. And Dr. Jones, now we move to something called ESSER funding and funding restrictions. What's ESSER funding?
Well, that's actually our federal grant. We have several. We have ESSER 1, ESSER 2. We have ESSER 3 or ARP. It's known by both names. Those are federal grants that were given as part of COVID to help public schools be able to get back on their feet. For instance, in ESSER 1 came very, very early into COVID, and that most of that funding, which was $758,000, was utilized for PPE very early on to keep our schools open. The most recent ESSER 3, or ARP, as many people call it, the American Rescue Plan, is at $9.8 million for public schools. And it really is to help reimagine schools, to transform schools. And there are no ties to that funding whatsoever. And I know that that's a misunderstanding from some people in the community. And there is no tie to that funding. It basically is funding that flows, through to the schools. We have to submit an application to the state. And basically, we have to put, what are our goals? How are we going to spend those funds? What are we going to spend them on? And they have to fall into five different areas. Obviously, one of the major components is to help with learning loss. A minimum of 20% has to be focused on learning loss. And academics is the mainstay of that grant, is what can we do to really help from a student achievement perspective. And there's a short video, actually, on our website, and if you click on the ESSER funding, and it goes through all four of the grants. It gives five areas for ESSER 3, and that was done by our deputy superintendent, Dr. Carabillo. She did a great job, but we're putting as much information out there as possible. But again, this grant money is really having wonderful impacts on very early on, paying for things like PPE, which would have cost the community several million dollars just to keep our schools open, because the PPE alone, between masks and plexiglass, we had tape on the floors early on to help kids directionality know how to move around the buildings and still social distance. We had to buy a lot of new furniture so that we could, you know, place desks 3 feet apart. So this funding has been very well utilized, and this last tranche, the $9.8 million, is really helping us. For instance, this year have a math interventionist in our building at full-time instead of just half-time, which was such a need in elementary school. We're also, we have some additional special education positions. We have social workers in our elementary for the first time, which is really helping a lot of our students who COVID impacted in many, many different ways. We have children who lost grandparents and loved ones in their families. Who are needing a little, you know, extra lift this year so that we can get them to focus on academics while also supporting kind of that social-emotional need.
So this grant money is doing some wonderful things for the school district.
Now, there have been rumors that this money is tied to vaccinations and vaccination rates for COVID.
That is absolutely incorrect. There is no tie to that whatsoever. As a matter of fact, they're really even managed totally by different departments at the state level. All of our ESSER grant and funding is handled just like our Title I funding, our IDEA, which is special education, and it goes through the grants office of the Connecticut State Department of Education. All of the vaccination information that we get, anything that is put out from the state, comes from the Connecticut Department of Health. It comes from the governor's office. They're totally separate and totally unrelated.
All right. We're speaking with the Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Tony Jones, on Focus on Education. And speaking of COVID, what are the latest COVID-19 numbers, according to the tracker and so forth, in the town for the schools?
We have been in single digits for the last several weeks, and the tracker is very, very, it's looking, it really looks like COVID is waning, and that's a great feeling to have. And it's allowing us to feel more confident that a lot of our mitigation strategies will slowly be able to leave us. And especially right now, very, very few cases in our secondary. We do have some at that elementary level, that K-5 level. But again, it's been in single digits. And, the town as a whole is no longer in that red, which is when it's high. We're back down into just the yellow range, which means there are very few cases even just across Greenwich, which is, again, a fantastic feeling to have going into November.
And, I know the governor's executive orders were extended through mid-February or such. Is there a possibility that he could lift mask mandates before then?
Well, if I've learned anything during COVID, it's that I cannot speak for the governor. I have no idea. I think there's a possibility if the trend keeps going in the way that it is, and I'm sure it will depend on obviously the entire state of Connecticut and what the trend is looking like. But I think there's a possibility, and especially if the vaccine comes out for the younger students, which they've said it's going to be released next week, if the vaccination rate is even at 50%, and I really don't know what parents will choose to do in that age range. I don't think anybody does until we get through it, just like we didn't know with our older students. But if that is reasonably high, I imagine it will give them more confidence, just like it did with our older students. So we just have a lot to sit and watch and learn between now and February, and I'm sure they will take all of those inputs and then make the best decisions to keep us safe.
Yeah, I mean, as we see it, morning like this morning, it's a cold one. We get, people are inside more, and there's going to be more family gatherings with Thanksgiving coming up, Christmas, New Year's, and so forth, all the holidays. The number seem to have been more out of school community transmission, so that could create a problem, I guess, with more people, more family gatherings could create more COVID numbers in the schools.
It could. I think it's going to be just, we're going to have to really watch and see what happens. We still know that people can have COVID and not know it and still be transmitting. Mm. And I'm sure that's going to be with us for, as long as COVID is here. We're going to have to rely on our epidemiologists, and our health professionals to tell us what's safe and what's not. And, some of those large gatherings, I just think I'm looking at it from the positive. I'm just so happy that families can be together in ways that we couldn't, for a very long time. And so I'm very, very hopeful that we'll get through our holidays without huge impacts. And probably one of the things that makes me the most optimistic from looking at a data standpoint is where we were with our high schoolers in athletics a year ago compared to this year. A year ago, we couldn't keep kids on the field. We couldn't have athletics because there was so much transmission. It kept shutting down teams and sending kids home into quarantine. We've had our sports season this fall, and we haven't had that. And our students are shoulder to shoulder. You've got students playing football, tackling one another. They don't have on masks, and we've been able to do it safely, and we have not seen that transmission. so they're definitely what we have done over this last, 12 months has made a difference. And I can, attribute that, I think, to partially, obviously, the vaccine, simply because that's the biggest change we've seen in our older students and athletics. And then also, I think the mask wearing has helped transmission inside the building. But again, I'm really hopeful that as we get into February, that maybe we'll see that go away. But we'll have to watch and wait.
All right, we're going to take another break with Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Tony Jones, here on Focus on Education. Dr. Jones, and we mentioned before about the vaccines, Centers for Disease Control expected to approve the COVID vaccine for kids today, ages 5 through 11. How will that be rolled out in the schools?
Well, when it comes to the vaccine, it really is pushed out from the Connecticut Department of Health. They're the ones that organize, what that looks like. What I believe will happen in Greenwich, what we were told as last week, is once the emergency use authorization is allowed, that there will be a clinic through the Yale New Haven system, which is very similar to what they did when the vaccine first rolled out for adults, larger clinics where it's managed, for instance, by Greenwich Hospital. But my understanding is they will have a link. Parents will click on the link, be able to sign up if they would like the vaccine for their child, and then go to the clinic. I also know that the Connecticut Department of Health was encouraging pediatricians. And one of the calls I was on probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago, initially they were thinking that it may be totally almost done by pediatricians because of the age group. However, there just simply aren't enough doctor's appointments to manage the number of children that would need appointments. And so I think it's going to be a combination of both.
Right. Do you know what's the numbers of ages 5 through 11 in the public schools? Any handle on that?
Oh, my goodness. No, it would just be a guess right now. I don't have my number sitting right in front of me.
Okay. And this would be, if you look at the vaccination rates among the kids that are in the schools that are 12 and above, it's been very good, right?
It has been. They have said we're almost 90%, so it's very, very high.
Yeah. All right. Let's move now to Cardinal Stadium and things moving along there better and better every day, it sounds like, right?
It has been a wonderful project, and I think it's something that was really needed. The first home game was just delightful when the stands were opened. They played there again last Saturday, and then a week from now is homecoming, which will be terrific. And we hope at homecoming that, our restrooms are open, our team room is open, getting the electric on. It's a wonderful place for our students and our community. So it looks beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
What is still to come in the project?
The two major pieces really were getting the water connected and getting the electric, because one of them needed RTM approval, and that was for Eversource to be able to come out and actually do the upgrade to the electrical system, which just that work alone takes 3 weeks. Had to go to RTM to get approval for them to be able to do the work on the land. And then connecting the water was another major component, just based on where the water line runs under the road. And it was in Department of Transportation easement area. So, that it takes a lot of coordination in order to make those two things happen. And so those are well on their way right now, and we're in good shape.
Well, what about the access road? What's happening with that?
That's phase two. We have the road which leads into the parking. The next in phase two would extend that road with a bridge going over the small creek and then right into the parking area of the high school. And that is phase two, and you will hear discussions about that in our budget presentation and questions over the coming months.
I see. Okay. All right. One other thing. I know the RTM spent a lot of time talking about the mural at the high school, and not this past meeting, but the meeting before.
Yeah, that was not actually, though, our high school. You're talking about the mural that's out on
The pollinator. Yeah, well, near the high school, I should say. Yeah, the pollinator.
Yeah, I think the high school students are going to help complete it. But that was not actually our mural to start. That was an artist that had been commissioned. I haven't had a recent update. I know that they were going to try to get students to help complete it. But that was not a mural that we actually started as a school project. Mm-hmm. But I think the staff were happy to jump in and have some students help complete it.
Right. All right, Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Tony Jones, where's Thursday night's meeting, by the way, for the budget presentation?
All of our meetings right now are still at Central so that we can offer virtual meetings and in person. And, you know, I hope that we will always offer virtual because we have several hundred people who are joining meetings that would not normally be able to watch them. So that's been a good takeaway from COVID. So it's at Central, and it also will be online, so mm-hmm. you can watch it virtually.
Have meetings been going longer because of that?
No, not really. I mean, our meetings sometimes are long. Our last one was long because we had a really long agenda. Great information, but a really long agenda.
Right, okay.
But it has not impacted the length of the meeting because we have virtual meetings.
Okay, because I know RTM has talked about kind of the unwieldiness sometimes of transitioning from speaker to speaker and that kind of thing. It's taking longer, but not really impacting. And school board meetings generally go long anyway.
Yeah, no, our meetings have been run really well, and we have two people that behind the scenes to help make sure that our technical, you know, skill set is high so that our meetings mm-hmm. can run as they should.
All right, Superintendent Dr. Tony Jones, thanks for your time this morning, and I wish you a happy Thanksgiving, and then we'll talk again beginning in December.
Wow, I can't believe it will be December. Thank you.
Take care. Have a good day. That's the Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Tony Jones, on Focus on Education here on